Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
And I am coming to you live in the Central Time Zone from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studio here in Des Moines, Iowa, where I am the director of the Zeta Institute for Foundations in Ethics and Leadership and the director of Mission and Ministry here at Mercy College of Health Sciences. Bud, you're usually in Pittsburgh. You're the director of the National Institute of Newman Studies, but you're in a slightly different locale today.
I'm in I'm in Washington, D.C., and our show is about the common good. So if any listeners have ideas about how I can implement the common good here in D.C., I'm thinking cleansing the temple type motif. Like, if you need me to knock over any statues or talk to any politician, use the zip whip line today.
There you go.
To give me those ideas.
Wait for it. It's coming. Yeah.
Ah.
That's what Washington, D.C. needs is some good old zip whip line. 515-223-1150, by the way. You're actually at the, I'm going to mess it up. So what conference are you actually at?
No, it's the Academy of Catholic Theology. And it's been good fun. I've seen a lot of old friends, Nathan Eubank, Reinhard Hooter, who teaches here. But it's kind of nice to be on the radio. There's a lot of eggheads here, and I'm an egghead, but it's nice to have some radio talk.
Well, it's also nice you've seen some of our Uncommon Good All-Stars like Matthew Umbarger out there as well.
Yeah, no, it was great to meet Matthew in person, and it was one of those moments where he kind of approached me, and I was supposed to know him, but his beard has gotten larger since the internet photos that I've seen.
Oh, yeah, he is.
It took me a few moments to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, I know. Like, I it's always an interesting brew of overgrown beards and haircuts from different eras whenever you have academic conferences, that's for sure.
You'll appreciate this, though. I met Joshua Pastor from Newman as well, Newman University in Kansas.
Yep.
And they invited me to give, like, this opening talk for the faculty and staff this year. And they said the reason they invited me is because if anyone can handle you, they're worth bringing to campus.
They're like, if you have to like be on a show with Bo every week, then the Newman University is going to be no sweat.
Yeah.
Well, so one thing that I was going to point out is, as you can tell, Bud is on the cell phone, and we want to keep going our Get Bud Out of the Well initiative. That's what we're calling it, because what we're trying to get is a very strange-sounding device called the Comrex Opal. I don't know why they name it after old ladies, but that's what we do with technology. That if you go to patreon.com/ICR, so www.patreon.com/ICR for Iowa Catholic Radio, we have a Patreon donation service where we're taking donations specifically to get technology to get Bud out of the well. Now, Bud, what do we have special for people who give donations to try to get you out of the well?
Well, if you contribute to this cause, we're doing special broadcasts of the show, basically. Can we call them podcasts?
Sure.
I don't know what the technical definition is, but
exclusive content.
Some time above and beyond our normal show recordings, too. And it gives us a little more freedom to talk about matters, important matters like baseball and food.
Right. The way I've been telling people is if you know, a lot of people I hope are into the show because of us staying on topic and really diving deep into things. However, if you're one of those people who like about the 5-minute side banter when we start going off chasing rabbit trails, these are essentially 15 to 20-minute rabbit trails that are exclusive content for people that help out. This, of course, helps out all of Iowa Catholic Radio. We just happen to have a specific need that we have in mind, but the Comrex Opal will help all the shows be able to communicate better with guests and should improve the sound quality of people calling to the show. So if you feel so inclined, like I said, www.patreon.com/ICR for Iowa Catholic Radio. But today on the show, I'm really excited about this. We're going to have Leah Labresco on the show. Leah, I knew of Leah way back when she had a blog, Unequally Yoked. She still has that. But when she started it off, it was on the Atheist channel. with pathos, because she initially was writing about an open-minded atheist trying to discover the faith. Now she writes, she has multiple books out about the faith, and the one we're going to talk about today, a new one coming out soon called Building the Benedict Option, which is about specifically how are we going to embody community in the here and now. So I'm looking forward to that discussion.
Yeah, it's going to be a great guest. I didn't distract you from mentioning our underwriters, did I?
No, I was going to immediately do that now, right? So as always, our underwriters of our show are Cartridge World. So, you know, you yourself have a book that came out, Bud, and if people want to, like, go track it down, it's in hardback, so it might be a little bit cost prohibitive for some, but, you know, if you only would have printed it out on Cartridge World cartridge, maybe it was cheaper, Bud.
Well, another way you can use Cartridge World is if you want to send me a letter requesting a discount code to help drive the cost down some. I do have that.
That's pretty.
You can write me a letter, print the letter at Cartridge World, and then I'll print the discount flyer there and send it back to you.
I was going to say John Leonetti, I don't think has discount flyers, so that's you did discount code. So that's pretty cool, bud. Then always as underwritten by Mercy College of Health Science, our summer semester is really on the way. But you can be geared up for a good start in the fall. No wait lists. We have RN to BSN, healthcare administration, health information management online. The accelerated BSN is going to start in the fall so people can go through a 12-month program for study people that have previous BA experience. So a lot of exciting stuff happening at Mercy College, and we always want to say thank you for them supporting us.
So, Bo, you're doing a section of servant leadership this summer?
I am. And that's always
face
a special
to face
group.
To face.
Yes, always a special
nice.
Group. So, go ahead.
How do they look this semester?
It's a full like one, and we've got some people who, we got an appropriate amount of feistiness already. Okay. It's already week three, and we're having the type of arguments you want to have. So whenever we get that, it's always a good mix, and it's always something that I'm happy to do. So if you want to have not only the best technical knowledge you can get, but maybe some feisty discussions about what it means to be a servant leader, mchs.edu is the place for you. Stick around. We're going to be back in a few minutes, and we will be back with Leo Labresco on The Uncommon Good. But you already mentioned it, so if people want to text us and talk to us, 515-223-1150, the Zip Whip line is how you might be able to do that. We really encourage people to use the Zip Whip line because Bud is in Washington, D.C., and there's all sorts of crazy things he might be able to do. I know there's like at least food trucks all over D.C., Bud, or maybe you can get a fake constitution. Maybe you can get it signed by Nicolas Cage. Whatever it is that the people want, 515-223-1150, the Zip Whip line. We'll be back after this.
Thank you, construction professionals, for your support of Dowling Catholic Sports 365. Construction Professionals is a family-owned business dedicated to our customers. Whether designing, building, or renovating, we are here to better serve you. CPCustomHomes.com. Support for Dowling Catholic Sports is provided by Two Rivers Glass and Door, providing commercial glass and aluminum storefronts. 515-222-4860. Joe at tworiversglass.com.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Hey friends, John Leonetti here, and I want to thank R&R Realty Group for underwriting my show and for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. R&R Realty Group is locally owned by a Catholic family, built on trust, exceptional customer service. rrrealty.com. That's rrrealty.com.
Hey, what's for dinner tonight? Well, if you're in the mood for some fine dining and cozy atmosphere, Fire Creek Grill has hand-cut steaks cooked to perfection. To reserve your table today, online, firecreekgrill.com or 515-224-0500.
St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient. Learn more at svdpsm.org or call 515-282-8327. This message brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher out on the East Coast joining us. Today on the show, we have a very special guest, Leah Labresco, which you can see all of her stuff at leahlabresco.com. She's a freelance writer covering religion and statistics. I really think that you can get the breadth of all she does by reading articles she's had in First Things, America, Commonweal, but also in 538. She's written books like Arriving at Amen, one of my favorites about talking about prayer and conversion stories, but one that is forthcoming out here soon is called Building the Benedict Option, A Guide to Gathering Two or Three Together in His Name. Leah, thank you for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
It's really, I have to say real quick, to geek out as a fan of yours, I've been reading your stuff since you were an atheist and like got to see all of that sort of play out on the internet. So after all these years, it's wonderful to be able to not only have a conversation with you, but have a conversation on a radio show. So thank you for coming on.
Well, I'm really glad to be here.
So one of the things that I think is really interesting, to give some backstory, if you don't mind, the Benedict Option, which I'm thinking a lot of people at least have vaguely heard about this. I think we've even had coined a new phrase that I didn't expect to happen, the option wars, when people on various places online talked about which option they liked or were there options, etc. What I want to say about your book is every worry I have about something like the Benedict Option becoming an abstraction or something maybe too hard for a lot of people to do, right out of the gate, every time you talk about this, you put my mind at ease, because I've heard you say your book is about how do you start living a communal way if you only have 2 weeks of effort to put into it and not 5 years or the money to build a community, etc. What are you hoping people, when they approach this book when it comes out, that they'll get at the very beginning in a practical way?
I think the first thing is just that there's no point in waiting to build thicker communities. That everyone needs to not be lonely, to pray with others, to live our Christian faith in community. You know, it's a foretaste of heaven, and it's a promise of the world to come that we'll live and love God together. So that really means it's not something you can wait for till when, you know where you're going to have a mortgage, or you're waiting till you're married so you can make all your plans together, or you're waiting until you're done having kids, or you're waiting. You know, you can't do that about eating. You can't do that about praying by yourself. And you can't do that about community. So once you are really starting the project of what can I do where I am, that a lot of the answers are smaller and more achievable than people expect.
I think one way to put this, every time I hear you talk about it, is it's really a dwelling on what the incarnation is. We say we believe in a God who became incarnate as a man, but then it seems like we forget that that means he had a body and he stubbed his toe, that you know he probably ran into a thorn bush every so often. You know what I mean, right? Like, he smelled people not smelling great. Like, there's sometimes that we have to dwell on these really little things about the life of our Lord Jesus Christ, because we will disincarnate ourselves. So we know that we're supposed to be embodied community in the body of Christ, but we'll start acting like we're, I don't know, floaty little ghosts, and that if something looks even the least bit ugly, you know, we should back off from it. Does that motivate some of what you're talking about, is the incarnational fact of our existence?
Well, there's something I actually quote from the Christian writer Wesley Hill, author of Spiritual Friendship, where he's talking about his own experience as a chaste gay man, you know, who's put aside the hopes of romantic affections and, you know, wonders or feels pressure about whether that means putting aside any feelings of friendship, any kinds of feelings of love. Could they become something else? And he's a professor who goes, look, it's no point trying to be holier than God. No point trying to be more spiritual than God.
Right.
That God made us, our bodies, to perfect us, sometimes as a cross, and sometimes it's a blessing, but we won't get closer to him by running from what he's made us for and running from, you know, the real hungers to love others that he's given us. So, you know, I think a lot of the time in my book, a lot of the advice I give is really to start with the humblest hunger, which is literal hunger and just have someone over to your house to eat. Have them over to eat something easy. Just have fresh fruit together. Don't cook if you don't want to. But bring someone into your home with all the intimacy that involves. Eat with them, you know, serve their needs, and then pray together, even if it's simply an Our Father.
Well, yeah, this is Bud Maher. Thanks for being on. I grew up in a very different like place than you did, where faith was a part of my home life from an earliest age. And with Bo, I followed with interest your conversion story. I'm curious, like, looking back to your time before coming into the church, do you feel like, as an atheist, that you thought about community along similar lines? Or how has Christianity kind of transformed the way that you think about these matters?
I think I've always been interested in community because I'm a person. And because I'm, you know, a millennial, I'm someone who exists in a world where a lot of the traditional supports to community are already gone. So community is always more of an active choice and a construction rather than simply fitting into something around me that already exists. But I think one of the things that's changed the most is that as a Christian, I feel like I can take bigger risks, that I'm being backstopped by God in a way I didn't believe was true as an atheist, and that I really see in the lives of the saints something I want to imitate, which is a real profligacy of the saints. Saints don't need to husband their love, don't seem to feel the need to husband their love and their strength as carefully or invest only in the relationships they know will last, because they trust God to be sure that all love is never wasted when it's done for him and for his people. And so I kind of take that as an encouragement, you know, not always to overextend myself logistically, because realistically I have to sleep every night and so on, but to overextend myself in the sense of loving more people than I can credibly make permanent lifelong commitments to, doing a small thing where I'm not sure what the fruit of it will be. The other day we had a procession, a rosary procession for the new feast of Mary, Mother of the Church this week. And that was something where I posted that we were doing it on Twitter. And, you know, about 15 minutes before we were starting, my husband got a text from someone who had seen my Twitter post and said, "Hi, I'm a person from Twitter who's never met you. Can I come to your house for this?" And we said, yes, right? And sometimes that's going to backfire.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think there's more reason as a Christian to trust that hospitality and risk-taking in the service of hospitality is a good idea, even if in the short run it's a bad idea.
Well, and what I think is fascinating about this, again, like you have been, you've really traced these thoughts and this growth, and that has to be a whole other show where we can ask, do you think it's weird that people ask you about parts of your life that they were never a part of, but, you know, you were forthcoming with? So I know that you're an analytic person. Like, that's many of your early posts when you converted were about this. I think your book, Arriving at Amen, brings this up analytic. You love math. You do statistics, which to me might as well be magical incantations of elves, for all I know. But I'm assuming your numbers are right. So this means that this doesn't necessarily come to you naturally. I think sometimes people get this too, like, oh, all these people who are talking about, you know, community and opening yourself up to the Lord, you know, that's great for them, but they have this personality trait that I don't have. But I would actually think to say that, from what I know of your writing, isn't that something that you had to take a leap of faith on, right? That, like, you wish you could know all the answers beforehand, and Christianity, if it does anything else, is confound that sort of surety, as it were.
Well, I think you know, we're given some sureties that we don't always have, you know, proofs of in a mathematical sense, though we have that kind of proof of very few things in life, you know, and Christian life means accepting as a surety, you know, God's love for us, and we try and maintain our faith in it. And that's a bigger, wilder surety than any I've had access to before.
Yeah, no, that I think of myself as someone who's usually easygoing. I always freak out the people here at the radio station because I waltz in and tell them what the show's going to be about 3 minutes beforehand. But I am someone who's studied philosophy for a long time and thought that what I was getting into was really hunting down answers. And then I found out, of course, that really what you're doing is just a long, prolonged study of asking better and better questions. And like you said, trying to find out what it means to be happily assured, to be in the place to ask those sort of questions. And I think that, like, what, you know, we don't have the book, but like what I know from you talking about it and the sort of essays you've written that I think inform it, that's something that you're really also getting at as well, even in a tertiary way, if not directly, is we talk about faith a lot. And I think sometimes people think like vague sense of, I don't know, like they're, you know, you said backstop and surety, and that like those ways, because you have that backstop and that surety, it allows you to take risks. Do you think that that's something that's holding us back in understanding the radicality of where two or three are gathered?
I think it's something we all struggle with, and I don't think it's a specifically modern problem. I think that God makes such an enormous promise to us that we genuinely can't picture it. Even before we get up to, do we trust it? Even when we try and trust in God, we're still undershooting how much he loves us and what he wills for us.
I like that.
So, you know, it's always a mix of, you know, struggling to have faith, but just, you know, there's a reason we have apophatic theology, that it's hard for us to articulate or understand this side of heaven, what God wills for us and the enormity of it. So, you know, part of it's always a struggling in faith and trust, and some of it's just a real limitation of being created.
When I've been diving into these topics and reading the Benedict Option and talking to other Catholics about it, you know, one thing that I sense from some folks, and Bo used the word in his last question, like radicality. When we talk in this way, I hear some people saying, like, well, is this sort of like a heroic thing that some Christians do? Or is this, you know, like a call for all of us? Leah, do you have any thoughts about, like, is there a danger in sort of like casting this maybe as like an option or something that's above and beyond just like the baseline of discipleship?
I think the thing to remember is lots of the things that are a good idea to do aren't that crazy. We can do great good without actually doing anything very wild. Having a couple friends over for dinner, moving a meeting from a Starbucks to your own home, that's not crazy, but it is loving and hospitable. There's a great story I like in Jen Fulweiler's new book, where she's talking about that she had kids on her block who just kept prank buzzing her buzzer on their way home from school. And this would be right when her baby was taking a nap, so it was a nightmare for her. And she said she kind of felt God prompting her, and she knew it was God because it clearly wasn't her idea to invite these kids into her home. And, you know, that was a stupid idea, so she didn't do it for a bit. She disconnected her doorbell. But eventually, kind of, she wound up inviting these kids in, and they weren't, you know, rats. Like, they were bored and lonely, and they wound up coming over and having tea with her. And then when she got really sick, they helped take care of her kids. Now, the one thing she did that kind of, like, allowed God to let loose these channels of grace was a pretty small thing, which is invite over some slightly annoying neighbor kids. That's probably, you know, God willing, and she's a saint, like, probably not going to be a prominent story in anyone's hagiography. But it is, you know, an act of trust and an act of love, and that's what God asked for us. We just don't know the scale at which he's going to ask it of us.
That's such a gin move, by the way, to unplug the doorbell. I've got to talk with her on her show quite a bit and saw her when she was in Wichita. But I remember telling her that like all sorts of people would do all sorts of things, but gin would get up and go undo the doorbell. That's perfect. I think that starts to be something that maybe people have to think of as well. I remember someone, I was telling them I was going down to visit the monastery where I'm an oblate. And they're all like, oh, well, that's great. I think it's great that people are monks, but I don't have the personality for that. And I had the opportunity to tell them, like, actually, a lot of these monks are actually loud blabbermouths. And I can prove this because every Thursday they have recreation and none of them will be quiet. And they talk the whole time. And, you know, then there's stories about, like, well, this prior, evidently when he was in college, you know, he was, all the girls liked him. He just knew how to talk to the ladies, but then he felt called to be a monk, blah, blah, blah. I think sometimes that's something we have to get over, too, is to say, sometimes God is calling you directly at the chink in your armor, as it were. That, mm-hmm. that he goes, hey, you know, you're really good at all this other stuff, so I'm going to really help you this other way. You talked about being a millennial. Do you feel that that is something pressing the millennial generation, is that God is finding new creative ways to, so to speak, attack right where maybe millennials feel the weakest when it comes to these ideas about community?
Well, I think God always, you know, uses weakness to confound the strong, and there's nothing new about that. I think what's kind of more striking to me is just the absence of communities to join, and the absence of, you know, third places in our neighborhoods, places that used to be something like a pub that everyone really belonged to, or a park that was heavily frequented, or kind of the James Jacobs, like, lively streets, is that there, you know, there, it's a hunger and a deficiency as much as it's like a personal weakness. And God calls us to it, you know, in part because he can work great things with the smallest things there is, but also just because these things are good for us, because we need them.
Yeah, you have very nice examples. I was thinking in Oklahoma, there was the empty parking lot where people drank together at night. And what's funny is I go back to these small towns in Oklahoma where I'm from, and I'm like, where's everybody drinking in the parking lot? And I know the police are probably happy about this, but I'm going to go ahead and act like you're cool with this, and license you as part of my defense.
I am cool with this.
Yeah, right. Like, there needs to be parking lots where everybody could get together and drink, especially if you're in a town of just under 1,000 people. And I think it's actually small things like that that people miss. They took them for granted. They go away. And I don't know, there's nothing great about drinking in a parking lot. I'm not trying to, like, really sell this to, like, you know, Carnival Cruise or anything. But there is something magical about the fact that people used to figure out how to get together. And like you said, it's not absolutely new. People have always had to figure this out. But it is something I think that we can't take for granted. And that's, it seems to me, your book is about. We just have to be reminded to be mindful about something people used to just do on their own.
And I think one of the real benefits of even drinking in the parking lot, which I'm assure you is not exactly how I'm trying to brand my book.
but it's a front
really,
cover.
Really sweet parties. Everyone head
can
to
you
your
still
parking
change
lot
the title?
Yeah. But I think part of the thing that's good about that is that it promotes the kind of love that storge, right? The love of familiarity, a casual sort of love, a fondness rather than an intense liking.
Mm.
And that's part of what brings us together, that you can be fond of people you kind of don't even like very much just
yeah.
because they become part of your life and you feel that sense of, you know, warmth of familiarity. But it takes casual encounters to build up that storge, and storge can give you room to build to a larger kind of love, because then, you know, if the parking lot drinking friend isn't there for a week or two, you do wonder what's happened to them, you know, just out of a sense of disorientation, and then maybe you find out they're sick, and maybe you help take care of them. Who knows? But you need often those invitations to a lesser casual love in order to build up the stronger ones, and often that's what there doesn't seem to be room for, those glancing repeated contacts.
No, I think that's right. Like, I always ask students, like, you know, like, yeah, who's the idiot in your friend group? And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, everybody has the idiot and everybody has the jerk. And I'm realizing they don't necessarily as much. There's not, like, the idiot and the jerk. There's, like, a lot of people who just all agree on one thing. And, you know, that I think that you're exactly right. We don't have casual encounters, so a lot of people don't end up being friends with people that don't sort of, like, click off all the same boxes. And that is another thing too. I realize we're coming up on the break, so we'll have to throw this into the next segment, but I think sometimes that's what happens, is people act like if it's not going to go perfectly or we're not perfectly aligned, we can't be friends. But Lord knows that I wouldn't have the friends I have if they wouldn't, you know, be okay with the loudmouth jerk idiot, which I think I play that role sometimes. So
we all play that role sometimes. Anyone who doesn't think so is kidding themselves.
Yeah, I think that's great. So we're going to take a break here. This is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher speaking with Leah Labresco. We will be back after these messages. If you want to contact us with the show, we're always willing to hear you. Speaking of casual encounters with community, Iowa Catholic Radio on Facebook, at IA Catholic Radio is our Twitter handle. You can call, like I said, text in at the Zip Whip line. 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150. We have the Patreon account, patreon.com/ICR. But like I said, we want to hear from you. We do things like the Intune biweekly e-newsletter where we mail out every Wednesday, every other Wednesday, I should say, easy to navigate source for station headlines and everything like that. Only 2 emails a month so we don't bombard you. But we want you to be a part of our ministry, a part of our community. So like I said, Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio. You can like us and follow us at the Twitter handle, at IA Catholic Radio. We will be back after these messages with the Uncommon Good.
Thank you, Construction Professionals, for your support of Dowling Catholic Sports 365. Construction Professionals is a family-owned business dedicated to our customers. Whether designing, building, or renovating, we are here to better serve you. CPCustomHomes.com. Support for Dowling Catholic Sports is provided by Two Rivers Glass and Door, providing commercial glass and aluminum storefronts. 515-222-4860. Joe at tworiversglass.com.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Hey friends, John Leonetti here, and I want to thank R&R Realty Group for underwriting my show and for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. R&R Realty Group is locally owned by a Catholic family. Built on trust, exceptional customer service. RRRealty.com. That's RRRealty.com.
St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient. Learn more at svdpsm.org or call 515-282-8327. This message brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Looking for a family doctor? Vitae Family Cares physician Greg McKernan, a DO, has practiced for 27 years, seeing patients of all ages. Vitae is Latin for life, and as a pro-life physician, Dr. McKernan is certified in NAPRO technology. Located at 50th and I-235 in West Des Moines, VitaeFamilyCare.com.
Back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher, we're speaking with Leah Labresco, the closest thing to a Renaissance woman I think we have working on the internet today, leahlabresco.com, but specifically talking about her book, Building the Benedict Option, A Guide to Gathering Two or Three Together in His Name, which is a much better subtitle than Drinking in Parking Lots. I agree with you on that one, Leah.
Well, I'll save that for the released, like, expanded one, though.
going off of what we talked about last time, I think a good question that always gets brought up when you're trying to be intentional about community is, that's great. Let's be intentional about community. Let's get people who are like-minded, family resemblance-minded, if you're going to be Wittgenstein about it, that we get people who are serious about wanting to do something about building community and friendships. But then the next thing that people will say is, well, is this always going to trend towards elitism? Is it always going to trend on, you know, making hard and fast borders for the community that decides to be intentional? I'm guessing from what I've read, you've already thought about this a few ways. How do you man, you know, this mean between being not intentional enough and being, so to speak, too intentional?
Well, I think for most people who are interested in building up more community than they have, lots of these questions of, like, what will our rule of life be? How will we deal with people breaking it? Like, are all just wildly premature. that most people aren't anywhere near the point where they can plausibly make this kind of large commitment to each other. Like, the challenge is going to be, how do I find anyone at all to, like, have a sustained relationship with? And so I think some of those questions are interesting. I've actually, like, read some really fascinating books on building intentional communities, and there are, you know, for groups that are at the point of, like, let's buy a big plot of land. Like, there are huge, like, hurdles you have to navigate at that point to make a real plan that can work for everyone. But that's not who my book is for. Like, there are cool books on that topic, and that ain't what I wrote. because I'm writing for people who are kind of at a much earlier stage of just wanting more people to be communal with. So my focus is really more on, you know, what does it take for you to feel comfortable opening your house to someone else, to do something like at least a little more intimate this week and a little more vulnerable and a little more risk-taking than you usually do. And keep doing that and see where you end up. But it's more a pointer of how to build community and keep heading in one direction rather than, and once you get to community, here's what you'll do.
Leah, there was a line, and I think it was an interview that you had that kind of jumped out to me, where you said, like, one of the temptations that you faced are, like, sort of like a different direction in your life is towards Gnosticism and kind of, like, a denial of the, like, the goodness of the body, seeing the body as something that we're sort of, the real self is imprisoned in. And you said part of overcoming that when you first came into the church was just, like, the simple practice of baking bread. That, like, rather than approaching eating as, like, refueling, actually spending time and care and preparing meals, are there other kind of, like, small practices that you've found helpful along this path?
I think, you know, making food for anyone is helpful because it means you're doing deliberate, kind of concrete, non-theoretical work to take care of them. Getting together with someone to talk about a real problem you're having is actually an act of generosity, even though you're benefiting from their advice and their prayers, because it means it's a kind of unveiling of yourself. And, you know, the word for unveiling is apocalypse, so if it feels intimidating, you're right? Mm. I think one thing I like doing is just as a small thing, like, look for a saint's day coming up soon, and there's always a saint's day coming up soon, and just invite a couple people over to celebrate that saint. And you can have dinner together. You can theme it to the saint if you want to, but you don't have to. You can find some prayer that's associated with that saint and pray it together, and otherwise just spend time together. It's a small excuse to eat and pray together, but I find that, like, having an excuse really helps people.
So I'm going to show my arrogance here, but I always enjoy when people agree with me and they didn't even mean to. And the reason I'm saying this, Leah, is actually one of the things that I think got Bud and I's friendship going all those years back when we were still in Protestant seminary, is it was St. Athanasius Day, and I figured this out, and I'm like, let's all have a party on St. Athanasius Day, and we all got together, and then we jokingly, in the spirit of St. Athanasius, loudly argued with each other, and it went great. And so I think that's absolutely right. Like, the church has multiple occasions for you to party, and fast too, obviously, but if you're not willing to do that, if you're not willing to say that there's multiple occasions to come together and do something, I really do think that there's something missing out. I think that was missing, you know, from my Protestant upbringing, not to, like, you know, throw too much shade their way, but I really do think that, like, that is something that we didn't think of, that, like, God really has sprinkled throughout all of the calendar year a way for us to come together. And then just real quick, I have to point out, I'm going to make a t-shirt, because I don't know if you've seen a picture, Leah, but I'm sort of a tubby lad, and I'm going to make a picture that says, I defeated Gnosticism. So thank you very much. So sorry. Yes, Saints Days.
The church really also has, like, you're right, the church, you know, spoils us with celebrations, and that's why we really enjoyed that new Marian feast this past week.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was our first time ever to celebrate it. You know, next year will be your second time ever to celebrate it, so go wild then too, right? But it really emphasized, wow, you know, the church invites us to celebrate, but it also invites us to mourn. And I think that's the other thing, you know, just like the Psalms kind of cover the full gamut of human experience. You can always find a home for what you're feeling in the Psalms. The liturgical calendar does too, even if it's simply, you know, remembering every Friday Christ's crucifixion, or, you know, if it's something like on the Feast of Holy Innocents, you know, asking a friend who's had a miscarriage or a difficult loss of a child if they want to come over to your house and have you make something for them or send them cookies. on the Feast of the Holy Innocents. The church gives us room to mourn with each other as well as to celebrate with each other, and we just have to be alert to those invitations.
Yeah, at Commonweal, you wrote an article about caring for the dying, and I was kind of drawn in by the title of the piece, A Final Hospitality, and I thought in that piece you did a great job of showing how, like, more and more young people, and myself included, although I'm not that young anymore, are kind of removed from those who are dying. And so when we're actually faced with that prospect, like a parent, the loss of a parent, it's something new and very foreign to us. But could you talk some to our listeners about, like, how caring for the dying is a form of hospitality as well?
Absolutely. You know, I think the thing is that if hospitality is caring for the needs of someone else, making them welcome, you know, that people who are dying and even after they're dead, you know, we still have the chance to make someone comfortable, to care for them, to stand by them in love. But more and more, almost every part of caring for the dead is distanced from us, you know, from the very end, that there's no reason. Most people can't bring a body home and just wash and dress the body of someone they love, to be the one taking care of them. And it's hard not to imagine that we'd all want that if it were just a little more normal to want that the last person taking care of you is someone who loves you and who knows you, like, to whom your body is not a stranger. But what's normal is for it to be a funeral employee who's going to paint perhaps a different face than you usually wore on you for the sake of not scandalizing anyone else because you're not wearing lipstick, right, while you're dead. And, you know, this has just been a long, slow push of the work of caring for dead people and the chance to love people to the end away from us. Drew Gilpin Faust talks about in her Civil War book, This Republic of Suffering, that because people died, you know, away from home during the Civil War, that, you know, clergymen and fellow soldiers kind of scripted what a good death looked like because they wrote up their descriptions of how people died, some of them sanitizing them to family. But what death looked like changed because refrigerated train cars and embalming made it possible to prepare people for burial away from home. And after the war, that still became the standard of care. That there's a professionalization of caring for the dead that makes little room for families. And, you know, really does leave us at loose ends at the time when kind of we most want work to keep taking care of someone we love. It's our last chance to do it besides praying for them, God willing, to come through purgatory. And I think that's a real shame. And I think it's a shame that people are forced to face this both, you know, intense grief, but also intense gift to care for others as an amateur, rather than treating it as something we know we'll be asked to do sometime in our life, almost every single one of us. You know, don't we want to start preparing now to love others?
You see, that's one of the benefits of having a face for radio, is I don't think anyone's going to waste makeup on me. They're like, this is kind of what you get, folks, and so no one's going to try too hard. Actually, so that book on the Civil War, I can attest to, is a fantastic, fascinating book. I taught
so
a class.
Great.
Yeah, I taught a class on, I called it The Dead and the Dying, not on death and dying, because I was talking about the relationship of living people to dead and dying people, not the concepts. And so there was another book, I think it's Felipe Ares, called The Hour of Our Death, and it talks about how even the process and understanding of dying has changed through the ages. So I guess I'm just telling this to everyone, but also to you, Leah, if you want another great book, that's in that regard, it's fantastic. What made me think about this is my favorite strange Bible passage. It's Matthew 11, 16 through 19. To what shall I compare this generation? It is like children who sit in marketplaces and call to one another. We played the flute for you, but you did not dance. We sang a dirge, but you did not mourn. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they said he is possessed by a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they said, look, he is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners, but wisdom is vindicated by her works. I think that that's what you're trying to get at, is that because we try to live at a sort of even keel, like we want everything modulated, moderated, in the middle, we're a little afraid to go on the roller coaster ride that the church has for us liturgically and in our spiritual life. We don't go dance with the kids with the flutes, Jethro Tull or whatnot. We also don't mourn with the crying kids. And then we decide that the John the Baptist and the Jesuses of the world are too crazy. But wisdom is vindicated in exactly being open to doing both. And ultimately, it sounds to me, your book is about how do you take very practical steps to heed that sort of wisdom.
Amen. I love that passage from Scripture. And I think a lot of what the practical steps ultimately are less, here's a program that will allow you to achieve all these things that you've planned out, and more, you know, here's how you put yourself at greater risk so that God can act through you and with you. That, you know, we don't really, even the liturgical calendar helps us. It's not as though I'm recommending put on your calendar, like, dance with the flutes on Wednesday, mourn with the weepers on Thursday, right? Like, we just don't have that much capacity to plan for everything people need of us. But the challenge is more putting ourselves in a position where things are asked of us, where we ask them of other people, and we make all that easier. So it's always about cultivating interruptibility, movability, docility before God. And then, you know, heaven knows what will happen to us.
Well, you know, I don't want to sound like the old curmudgeon and a Luddite and just harp on technology, because that's how I sound. Your work, Leah.
You have loads of gray hair now, though, bud, so go ahead.
I can do it. Okay. I'm vindicated by my gray hairs. You know, listening to you and kind of the incarnational nature of this, of hospitality, like I think about something like Facebook, which is one of the main contexts in which we interact, and you do have a temptation to kind of present yourself in a certain light, like as someone who's attractive and having fun, and also the encounters are sort of ethereal, or they're kind of like very momentary. Do you have any advice maybe even for like Catholic parents, like how have you thought about technology in relation to this larger conversation?
I think technology is actually pretty good for storge when used correctly. And I do think, you know, on roads to storge are something we lack. So I have had friendships that kind of spun out of, you know, sometimes people seeing things I say on Twitter and coming to my house, right? But I mean, that's the crazier one. As long as it's just like having sustained conversations with a friend I already have on Twitter, which causes their friend to see and participate in them till it's not really that I know or like their friend exactly, but I start to get used to them or fond of them, and it opens me up to know them better. That there are friends who, you know, I don't do a huge deliberate community thing with, like a regular phone call, but they're constantly present in my life through small touches, small storge-like touches. Mm-hmm. And then that means I notice when something serious happens, and I've been thinking of them all this time in small ways, and then I'm much more likely to do something when they need me, both because I saw that they needed me, and I have felt fond this whole time, but there just hasn't been a large ask till now.
You know,
so I think social media is good for all those things, but you know, the trick is really moderating our own appetites and using it for what is good, or what's, you know, good just at the level of storge, small good, and if you notice it makes you angry, if you notice it like makes you despise other people, you have to change how you use it.
I should have been listening, but I've been planning Flute Fridays, to be honest. That's such a great idea. No, I'm kidding. I was listening, and what I thought of immediately is maybe the practical advice is there's all these things in the world, and we should use them wrong for the Lord. Because I think that that's what, when you get to like Facebook and Twitter, I mean, not to like vindicate how I do it, but man, Facebook is this wonderful way to argue with all sorts of weird curmudgeons all over the spectrum that I'm now friends with who I've never met, precisely because we sort of trusted each other enough to, you know, get into it. And again, maybe then this is maybe Okie sort of stuff, and I know our nice Iowa listeners are very nice and they don't like fighting, but us Okies at least do, and I think other people do. And there's a way in which if you, like, use it wrong for the Lord, anything can really be, you know, like plundering the Egyptians for some sort of good. And maybe that's one way to throw that out, like to discombobulate people's mind and open up new venues, is to say, there's all sorts of things. Use it wrong for the Lord.
I think that is a good idea. I think the big cautionary note I want to say before anyone runs off with that is that, like, use it wrong for the Lord, like, think less about dazzling people with your arguments, even if they're good.
Everyone's
used to being argued with, right? Do be shocking and unusual on social media, but do it like by being shockingly generous or joyful or vulnerable. There's a lot of room for Christians to offer a very distinct witness in how we interact with other people, but very little of it is Christian totally destroys atheist argument with these five proofs of God.
Oh, no, no. It's all of mine are usually just like, it usually always comes back on me, but we have a lot of fun. And I will say that I think sometimes that's what's lacking in a lot of this, which I think comes through in everything you do, Leah, is a lot of this should be fun, and we just don't know how to do it anymore. And that to mm-hmm. me, is sometimes the greatest thing. Is like, you get these people who are arguing, like you said, like any Twitter or Facebook argument has ever convinced one soul. But you're like, yeah, you know, get together. We don't have the parking lot anymore, but you can get on Facebook and have fun arguing with people. And I don't know. We've killed the joy, I think, sometimes.
Well, I don't want to undersell argument because it made a big difference for me, but it's always more of a relay race than it is, you know, one big mic drop and then you walk away from someone else. So when we think about arguing and making a case for the faith for someone else, you know, we should expect it's not something we'll accomplish on our own, and it's something where we may play a role we only discover in heaven later, God willing, help make a difference for someone else.
Well, we're running out of time. I really like you saying it's not a mic drop, it's a relay. I'm going to throw out that maybe it's like curling, right? Like, we're kind of like doing weird thing to ice that we're not even quite sure how it works out, but then, and we're not sure how the points work either, but in heaven, the curling that is arguing with each other will all be vindicated and make a lot of sense. So, anyway.
All right, so Ben Up book two is Drinking in Parking Lots, Curling for God.
There you go. These books write themselves. Leah, it has been fantastic having you on. Like I said, dream come true. Wonderful talking to you. Where can people find more of your work if they're interested?
They can always check out my writing and my upcoming speaking engagements at leahlabresco.com. And my book, Building the Benedict Option, is now available for pre-order on Amazon.
Well, it's been an honor to have you on. I hope that we get a chance to have you back on to talk further, especially when that second book you're talking about is getting written. And
we'll just broadcast from the parking lot.
That's
fun.
If we get the Comrex Opal like we're talking about, I think you can pull that off. So, Leah, thank you very much. God bless.
Thanks, Leah.
You too.
Well, bud, we've come to that time again where we haven't even got to make French fry jokes because you're in D.C. I don't even know what D.C.'s, like, food is. I have to admit, bud, D.C., you know, it used to be cool because it was like this real, I mean, not the politics, like the town was just this place, the time out of place. I went back there in February and there's grocery stores and chains now. I didn't know what to do. It made me sad.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing. I don't know what they're doing with their food these days, but I really love today's conversation. And, like, I didn't know the Benedict Option was basically, like, drinking in parking lots.
Yeah.
Baking cookies, curling, and inviting pranksters into your house. If that's what it is, sign me up.
That's right. Well, this is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, may Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, in our cities, our state, the nation, the entire world. This is The Uncommon Good. We will be back next Wednesday. I just got a text that said, Flute Friday with beer in the ICR parking lot. I don't know who sent that, but that's an idea we'll have to run with Tony Calmet. We'll see how that works out. Would you fly back in for that?
Yeah, bud? I feel like more so than the ICR parking lot, maybe somewhere on the south side, like St. Anthony's. I feel like the prisoners at St. Anthony's would be completely down with that idea.
I think they might be confused by curling, but if it's sort of like a hybrid of curling and bocce ball, it would all end up completely fine. Well, bud, like we said, we're coming to the end here. The events happening around the diocese. The next big thing, there's a July TBD wine collection party, so we'll keep you informed on that when it comes up. The Iowa State Fair, Iowa Catholic Radio always has a booth out there, especially with confessions in case, you know, you lose at one of the Kearney games and get a little angry. Christ Our Life Conference coming up September 29th and 30th, and that's just the beginning of things. But if people want to be more connected to Iowa Catholic Radio by listening, what are some of the things that they can be a part of on our station?
you know, reading through the works of the saints, a lot of saints mention, like, not being too attached to sleep as well. Mm. And so, like, rather than hitting the snooze button, jumping out of bed in the morning, 5 a.m., you can start with going through sacred scripture, transition straight into the rosary. Around the great programming, we have prayer throughout the day, also later in the day at, like, 10 p.m. and things. So a lot of great opportunities.
Well, there's the other way that we ask you to participate is being a part of our ministry. And being a part of our ministry is praying for us. But again, our ministry is not just the people talking or yapping up here. It's also you making this possible. We are, why can I not think of the silly, the word, but not for profit. And we depend on donations. And by doing so, you allow Jesus Christ and his word 24/7 through walls, able to broadcast in Central Iowa, Oklahoma, the different places that we all play. And so maybe if you can remember us between some of your bills, it's a way to contribute to the ministry of the church. So we appreciate everything that you're able to do. We love to hear from you, the text line, the social media, the biweekly e-newsletter. Just stay in touch, because we know that without you guys, we wouldn't be able to do this. So, Bud, great talking to you. Have fun in D.C. and fly back safe.
Okay, thank you.
This is The Uncommon Good. We're out!
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.